Hello, business owners, entrepreneurs, and executives. Welcome to today's Business Radio, a new hybrid radio show that airs both on air as well as online and on demand. We discuss all the topics relating to your business. Today's Business Radio interviews experienced business advisors to help you build enterprise value, improve profitability, and plan for your eventual exit. Whether you're an entrepreneur just starting out, a seasoned business owner, or a top-level executive, today's Business Radio will help you achieve your personal and professional goals. Today's Business Radio is available around the clock, around the world, online, and on demand at todaysbusinessradio.com. Now, the host of today's Business Radio, Tom Lyons.
Hello, this is Tom Lyons. I'm here with my co-host, Sam Zordich, and our producer, Jorgie Jorgensen. And today's guest is Jay Perrell from First Scribe, Inc. Jay, thanks for joining us today.
Morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Jay, I've known you for quite a few years, but our listeners don't. Could you tell us a little bit about yourself and your firm?
Yeah, well, my name is Jay Perrell, and I own the company First Scribe. We are professional web developers and promoters of websites. We've been in business for 14 years, which may not sound like a big deal, but I like to say web years are kind of like dog years for web design and development. That is an awfully long time. We're called First Scribe because we were one of the first web developers here in the Twin Cities, and we do business for companies large and small, and it ranges anywhere from search engine optimization to development to design, database integration work, and a lot of things in the middle, too.
It's a lot of stuff, Jay. How did you get into this field of work?
Well, when I was a graduate research assistant at the University of Minnesota, which is a part-time position I had as I was going to get my master's degree, I was introduced to this brand new layer running across the internet called the web. And back then, it really wasn't all that exciting because when I got on the web, there was only four or five websites. And I distinctly remember that only one had an image. So I've seen it go from that to what it is today and have been very intimately involved. The big thing back then was hyperlinked text. The fact that you could actually click on a hyperlink and it brought up a new document. That was the big revolutionary thing of the web.
Here we go, Sam. I'm going to get it again. This is new media, and he's talking about all kinds of things I don't know about.
Hyperlinks?
Hyperlinks. What's a hyperlink?
Oh, give me a break.
You got to remember, when I started in business, we didn't have computers.
Yeah, you had rocks.
We had rocks. That's right. Abacus, all the rest of that stuff. Jay, it sounds like you got into this at a perfect time, and your background led you into it. What were some of the first projects you got into? Were you building websites? How'd you start your firm?
Yeah, initially I was just building websites for myself and for friends, and then a couple of businesses approached me, and I built websites for them, and these were just real basic, you know, me building websites. I didn't have a full-time graphic designer or anything like that. And then I actually took a position as a financial analyst for a division of McKesson and built a website for them and gave a presentation to the board of directors how we needed to take the website further, how important it was, and that we actually needed to start taking orders online from our clients. Well, the board of directors, I think, kind of just laughed at me, and you know, I was a snot-faced kid talking big technology in a time when the web wasn't that big yet. But after getting laughed at, I think out of spite more than anything else, I actually quit my fairly lucrative job and started my own web design company. Darn near starved to death the first couple of years, but have since grown it into a fairly successful company.
Funny how those startups go that way. The first few years, it's pretty difficult, but you scrape out a living and you just stay with it and keep at it. And how many years would you say it's been that the web has been generally accepted and used by most businesses? I can in my instance, I think I've had the first website was a brochure. And then you threw that out and built me a new website, I can't remember how many years ago, and then we're constantly, it seems like, updating websites now, so the whole thing has changed.
Yeah, absolutely. It used to be, you know, even as little as 7-8 years ago, even executives of fairly large corporations would tell me, Jay, I need a pretty website. I need something that's professional, more or less to legitimize our online presence. Now what I'm hearing is, Jay, I need a professional website that exhibits a high level of usability. It's got to look very professional. We need to be able to maintain this website ourselves. Oh, and by the way, this thing needs to rock in Google searches.
rock in Google searches.
Yeah, it needs to be
at the
top.
We're going to get to that. I think I can recall that everyone at one point thought they had to have a presence on the web, and let's just get something quick done and put it out there. If somebody's looking for us, they'll find us. But today they're trying to make the thing really usable and have use it to drive traffic to their business, aren't they?
Right. It's really a couple-step formula. First, you have to get traffic to your site by somehow gaining exposure. That person needs to get to your site. Typically, the model we use is search engine marketing, you know, either through pay-per-click or search engine optimization, getting people to your site through the Yahoos and the Googles of the world. But once they get to your site, then what happens? If you've spent all this energy driving traffic to your site, you need to spend some energy making sure you convert that person once they're on your site. And convert means they either contact you or buy what you're selling, you know, some sort of positive success event.
So what's most important when you're thinking about a good website today?
Well, there's a bunch of things that need to be in place. First thing, if I was to sit down with a client and they say, I want a website, I would say, what is your goal or goals and what's most important? And generally what I hear is, we want to get more leads. We want to sell more stuff. You know, the typical thing. So based on that, we need to develop a strategy. And that strategy will involve the architecture of the site. If we need to sell more stuff or get more leads, we need to make sure that we build the right foundation for this website so that we can make it perform in the search engines. Once that's done, we've got to start working on usability, marketing, and then we also have to put in the analytics to make sure we can measure what we're doing.
Okay, when you're talking about usability, you're talking about speed, you're talking about ease of, what are you talking about in that category?
Usability involves when somebody comes to your website that they sort of know what to do. The online user right now represents one of the most extreme examples of fickle consumerism you will ever encounter. If you don't make this website first load quickly, if the eye doesn't like it, if it's built in such a way that they can't figure out where to go, if that thing that they just searched for in Google isn't sitting on that homepage saying, hey, click on me, if you just flat out make this person think too much on a web page, they're going to hit the back button and bounce.
How long does it take for them to make that decision? Or
it's not long. 3 to 5 seconds,
okay.
Something like that.
So we're getting more and more impatient.
Absolutely.
With the more technology we have.
Absolutely. And it's gotten worse over the last few years.
You won't believe this, but 30 years ago, driving from appointment to appointment, it was quiet in the car and you could think. Today you got telephones, you got radio, you got all kinds of, well, radio, we've always had that, but you've got all this technology and there is no time to think. And it's gone further. Now everybody's tied to a BlackBerry. Where's your downtime? There is no downtime. And then as all this technology has come up, we are getting less and less patient, aren't we?
Absolutely.
We want it quick and we want it now and we want it fast.
Yeah. And if you're not willing to do it, your competitors are. So
how do you make it usable? How do you make it fast? Are there special tools for that? Are there different software that's better than other software? How do you do that?
Well, you know, it's very important that you build the website in such a way that the file sizes are small so that it tends to load fast on a server. But generally speaking, even more importantly than that, a person's perception of how fast a site is more related to how long it takes them to find the particular thing they were looking for, as opposed to download or page download times. Although we try to optimize those as best as possible, your biggest opportunity here is making it highly intuitive and bubbling up to the homepage the really important things on your website and letting the user click and get direct access to the important stuff, as opposed to just relying on the navigation buttons and other ways of getting there.
So do you work with the marketing folks pretty closely then in terms of their customer base and how they perceive, or is it just general human behavior? Because I'm thinking that there's differences between retail users who want to go on and look for a widget versus someone who's looking for a service through a business?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. We take really both into account. There's some general things that people just relate to and what they know. If you have something that's clickable, meaning you can put your cursor on it and click it and it takes you somewhere, it needs to look clickable.
Okay.
And that's one of the biggest mistakes you see.
Got to jump off the page, be easy to find is what you're saying.
Yeah, absolutely. And believe it or not, one of the most highly responded to things in terms of being clickable is actually just blue underlined text. That's what you've been trained to click on.
When did they train me to do that?
Probably the second one you looked at.
Right. You were telling me I was too old to be trained, and he's telling me we've been trained to do this.
Yeah. So we have, and really web design is a very interesting blend and almost a competition between graphic design and usability and search engine optimization. And they're sometimes at odds with each other. And I get to sit down in design meetings and sort of be a referee sometimes because I have graphic designers who want to make this thing look absolutely gorgeous, all sorts of graphics and, you know, just a real nice work of art. But then all of a sudden the usability guys and the search engine marketing guys say, you know, we need text in this thing that's not going to be necessarily as pretty, but it's going to work better in the search engines and people will know to click on it. And ultimately, it's like a marriage. You meet in the middle and you come up with a compromise that works for both sides.
Do you have a balance between the visuals and the text? I mean, that you recommend just a starting point?
Well, a really highly qualified web development company knows how to blend both and pull it off.
Okay.
But there actually is a expression in our industry that ugly works in search engines.
Okay. So doesn't matter what it looks like.
They don't care.
Yep.
So this all goes back to where you started, strategy and goals. If you know what you're trying to accomplish, then you have to find a balance with the colors and the graphic designers and the message. And all of that ties into how you create that home page and the other pages?
Yes, that's right. And trust me, we have some very spirited meetings as we go through some of these things.
We're going to get you one of those pinstripe suits or shirts, black and white. You mentioned marketing. What are you talking about there when you're talking about websites and marketing?
There's really four different things. There's the organic search engine optimization. Oftentimes, you've probably heard it referred to as SEO, search engine optimization. It's got a few other names too, but essentially that's trying to position your site to the top of the free or the organic area of Google. So that's the area that's not sponsored. That's not the pay-per-click. The next part is the paid advertising, and now we are talking about the pay-per-click. This is what shows up at the very top. Oftentimes, you'll see three sponsored listings at the top and a column on the far right of the Google search engine result page. There's also social media things that can be done. Facebook, Twitter, LinkedIn, and that's a topic.
Don't glaze over, Tom.
No, I've got questions for him on this one.
And that's a topic far too big for this particular conversation. And then there's also email marketing, which I know has a bad name, but can be very successful.
Well, let's go back to those now one at a time. Organic search engine optimization. Now, you're saying that's if you build the site and you put your words on it and you do all of these things and you do a Yahoo search or a Google search, the organic is the free stuff. What comes up, or in other words, who comes up first?
Yes, that's exactly right. And that is the most important of all four of these. The organic search engine optimization is probably about 80% of what's going to get clicked on that search engine result page. And when I say a search engine result page, I mean, if you go to Google, you type in a particular key term. We go after Web Design Minneapolis, for example. When somebody types in Web Design Minneapolis, hits the enter or the search button on Google, the search engine result page shows three sponsored listings at the top, and then just beneath that, you'll see the organic positions. People tend to trust and click on the organic positions much more than they do on the pay-per-click.
Because they know somebody paid to be there on that first page.
Absolutely.
Doesn't necessarily mean they're the best. It just means that they're there.
Yeah. And you'd be amazed at how many people don't even understand that, but still don't like to click on those, and they're not exactly sure why. for lack of a better reason, there's just a stigma associated with pay-per-click. I think it's just sort of viewed as advertising.
Which is what it is.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. It is.
Now, what are the mechanics of that with the internet? How do they determine who comes up first and who comes up on page 5 and who comes up on 10? I know it's probably pretty complicated, but...
Are you referring to the organic or the pay-per-click?
Organic. The organic. I understand the pay-per-click. They buy their way to the top.
Okay. What you need to do is partner with a highly qualified search engine marketing company to get there. You can try to do this on your own, but the fact of the matter is if you're in a arena that's even moderately competitive, you're probably not going to win. Essentially, there's three basic components. You want to present Google a large site. You got to work on the right text, and you need lots of other sites, important sites, linking to you.
So Google's got some type of a ratings mechanism that goes out and looks at all the sites that have those kind of words in it, the keywords you mentioned.
Yes.
And that dynamic determines who comes up and who comes up first or last.
Yeah. It's a very dynamic and complicated algorithm that only the people at Google really knows exactly how it works, but you can sort of model the way it works.
And don't they change it like every other day now?
Yeah, there are constantly being changes, but I'm not an expert in search engine marketing, but my search engine marketing experts tell me that primarily the changes in the Google algorithm are efforts to prevent spammy, non-relevant sites that sometimes get to the top. The fundamentals for success in Google really haven't changed since its inception, and that's a large site, inbound links, and having the right text.
So what you're telling me is you and your team over the last 14 years have spent a lot of time trying to figure out how all this stuff works, and you've got a pretty good idea of what works and what doesn't, and then you build the sites accordingly.
Absolutely. Half of my company does nothing but full-time promote websites through search engines.
So you're making the websites work better using that dynamic that Google uses to determine who comes up organically.
Yes, we do. And, it really was not that big of a business, quite frankly, 7-8 years ago when Yahoo was king, because it was very easy to get a Yahoo listing and not all that competitive. But with the advent of Google, all of a sudden it's very important how you build your website, and you can't just expect to build it and they will come. That doesn't apply anymore. You need to build it, and you need to aggressively market it over the course of time and consistently market it. It's not just a one and out type proposition. You need to consistently market your website, look at the analytics. How are people getting to my site? Are they converting? And then reacting to those things.
And this is getting more and more complicated, I imagine, because there were, what'd you say, 4 websites out there when you started? Now there must be millions of websites out there.
Absolutely. The competition has gotten much, much heavier. And it's very easy to get lost on the internet if you don't partner with a company that knows how to market it.
Sam, every time we do a podcast, we learn something. And today, I'm realizing that a website is much more than a website. It's about hiring somebody that knows what and how they work and how to get you to the top of this organic search engine optimization.
Well, I remember what you were saying, the first one that my company had was a brochure. It was just a bunch of pages, hyperlinks in there, but that was about it. And now,
so was mine.
Yeah. And now it sounds, there's the constant changes that we have to put into the text and to the links and the constant updating. I can't imagine doing that
on my own. Much more complicated than it's ever been before.
Yeah.
But if you get it right, it can help your business, can't it?
Right. And all this stuff seems extremely complicated to you guys. There's a lot of jargon that goes on in the web design game, but, it's sort of like your TV. You don't really need to know how it works in order to benefit from it. The same thing with a good website. You don't need to know how all this stuff works. You just need to know you need to partner with somebody who can get it to work for you.
Sure. Our listeners are doing the same thing we are, Sam. They're just trying to run their business. But this is a new tool. The new media is a tool, and we need to learn how to use it. Jay, I know you don't want to talk too much about social media, but I'm interested in your opinion for business use. When I think of Facebook, I don't think of business. And we've had this conversation before. And when I think of business, I don't think of Twitter. How does a business owner determine whether or not he should use Facebook?
Well, this stuff is pretty much in its infancy in terms of becoming mainstream for business. It's definitely out there with the kids, and Ken will talk in much more detail about these things because he's more the expert on these topics. We're just starting to do this for some of our clients. It's fairly new, though, that we have clients requesting that we build Facebook or Twitter pages for them.
So business is still trying to figure out whether or not it's worthwhile to have a Facebook page. I know Sam's got a page, and a couple of my younger partners have pages, but I've refused so far.
Yeah, it's very difficult to show a ROI on Twitter or Facebook right now.
It has to be. LinkedIn, on the other hand, as I understand it, is old-fashioned networking using the internet. Have you helped your clients with LinkedIn, and have you helped your clients figure out how to use it?
To a limited degree, and Ken can talk more about that. I'm really a little bit out of the loop in terms of the LinkedIn stuff, but Ken would be your expert for that topic.
And for the benefit of our listeners, there'll be this is a series of three podcasts that we're doing with Jay and his firm. The second one will be about the mechanics of how you start and you build a website, and we'll get into a little more detail of that. And the third one will be on search engine optimization, and then we'll talk about some of the social media issues. Email marketing. We're using that at my firm quite a bit, along with a lot of internet-based research that we're doing now that we wasn't available 2, 3, 4 years ago. And the biggest problem I find on it is you have to have an acceptable way to use it so you don't get identified as a spammer. Can you run into that a little bit?
Yes, absolutely. We've seen many, many of our clients get what's called blacklisted over the years. They will somehow get a list of email addresses. Sometimes it's a very valid one. Sometimes they'll just go out and purchase a big list of random email addresses, and they will start sending it from their Outlook or their local email server from their domain name. And that's a great way to get blacklisted. What happens is a lot of services out there allow you to tag your email as spam. When the major providers get enough of it, they will blacklist you. So if you're not careful and you're sending out all this email, you'll become blacklisted. And when that happens, you can't send email to the major carriers anymore.
Well, we use an email broadcast service called Constant Contact, and everything goes out through that. I imagine there's quite a few of those out there. They tell me that if we use those lists judiciously and we don't use them too often, that we're in pretty good shape using a service like that. Is that correct?
Right. The services such as Constant Contact and Direct Target, and there's a bunch of them out there, they will force you to more closely comply with the federal CAN-SPAM Act, which says you can't really do unsolicited bulk email by just grabbing a bunch of lists. You need to know these people. You need to be able to send them email, and they need to be able to opt out. And there's a bunch of other rules that apply. And by dealing through one of these services, you'll much more closely comply with that, and you won't get blacklisted, or at least your chances of getting blacklisted are much smaller.
So if you get blacklisted, like you couldn't go through Visy, or anyone who's on a Visy would have you, the email wouldn't get through.
Yes, that's correct. Or Gmail.
Okay.
Or Hotmail or AOL accounts.
Yeah.
So it can become critical.
So if you're using your Outlook and you're sending out a bunch of these email broadcasts and then you get blacklisted, who blacklists you and what are the real ramifications? Does that mean you can't use that? You're shut off? What does it mean?
Essentially, it means when you send, let's say AOL blacklists you, okay? If you were to send out another email, and even if this was your best friend that you've been communicating with for 10 years, if you send him or her an email, that person won't get it.
So once you're blacklisted, you're done from that address.
Yeah, then you have to talk to AOL and get unblacklisted. So it can become a real hassle.
I imagine that's a fun process.
I actually went through it. So
you did?
Oh, yeah. When the emails, you could do these in the beginning, I thought, oh, this is so cool. So I sent out 100 emails to people I knew, but it was too many. So got blacklisted and had to go through, it was almost 3 months of getting off those lists.
So even your friends got tired of it. Sam.
Yeah, got tagged. No. No, actually, they do it at the ISP level, I think it is. And so one, and then they talk to each other. I don't know how that works, or it used to be that way. So
So if you get blacklisted by one, they share it with everybody else, and you're blacklisted from all of them?
I'm not exactly sure how it all works, but I just...
It's sad.
Yeah, I have technical people that deal with that type of thing, and we strongly tell all our clients, as I think we did you, Tom, use an outside service. Never send broadcast emails from your Outlook.
You did
or
tell,
other email client.
You did tell me that, Jay, and we listened.
Good.
Because the only thing that goes out of my Outlook now is onesies. If I'm answering somebody and they had sent me something, then we answer. Otherwise, we don't do this. Analytics. What's that all about, and how do you use it?
Well, analytics used to be something very few people knew about. More and more people are starting to know a little bit about analytics with the advent of Google Analytics. We, however, have been using analytics for years and years. In fact, we are an Omniture shop. Omniture is by far the best-in-class analytics in the world. We are the only certified Omniture shop in Minnesota. And you might say, well, why do I care? Well, the reason you care is because when we're doing search engine marketing and we're looking at how people are going through your site and if they're converting and if positive success events are happening, we need to track these things to know if what we're spending on promoting the site is paying off positively. In order to do that, having the best-in-class analytics is a huge help. For the first time, we can do things that you simply were unable to do with other lesser tools, and we're also able to generate almost any report our client wants and have that report scheduled and sent to them as a PDF on a regularly scheduled interval. So if marketing wants to see a particular report daily, they can get it. If the CFO wants to see some other report on a monthly basis, that happens. IT wants to see reports, they can get it too. So it's a huge benefit for my search engine marketing people, and our clients love it because they have all the reports they want when they want them.
So this is much more than just tracking how many people come look at your site. It goes beyond that, and where did they go on the site? What did they look at? What did they use?
Yeah, absolutely. And it's something that's a little bit outside of the scope of this conversation. I think in the next session, Ken will expand on it, but it's absolutely incredible the amount of data that you can mine from users now.
And the important thing is that constantly staying up to date with the way they're using it.
And you use a lot of that analytics to go back and tweak the website and make sure that it's working the way you want it to work, I'm sure.
Absolutely.
All right. Like anything else, live and learn and track it and find out what people like and what they don't. Any final thoughts on your startup and your success and how many years you think you're going to be at this from now, Jay?
Well, I tell you what, we are the type of company that we really like and enjoy what we do. We kind of have the luxury of selecting the types of projects that we want to do, and when we want to do a project, we want to do it right. So we're not the type of company that will do the real small, cheap websites, but we will do a very high-quality job, and really what we do is we want to be partners with our clients, and we feel successful when our clients' websites are successful.
And I've seen you in action, so I know that that's the truth. Well, Jay, we're just about out of time for today. I'm Tom Lyons, along with Sam Zordich, my co-host, and Jorgi Jorgensen, our producer. I'd like to thank Jay Perrell from FirstScribe for being with us today to talk about websites and all this new internet activity on this session of todaysbusinessradio.com.
You've been listening to Today's Business Radio with host Tom Lyons. Tom is the owner of Phelan Partners Limited, an M&A advisory and consulting firm. Today's Business Radio is also available around the clock and around the world at todaysbusinessradio.com. That's todaysbusinessradio.com. All content provided by Today's Business Radio is provided for general information only and should not be treated as a substitute for professional advice from your legal, accounting, and business advisors. Today's Business Radio is not liable for the contents of this podcast, nor does it endorse any commercial product or service mentioned or advised in this podcast. All radio shows, podcasts, and other content provided by Today's Business Radio is copyrighted and may not be reproduced or downloaded for any reason without prior written consent by Today's Business Radio. If you have a topic you'd like covered at Today's Business Radio, log on to our website at todaysbusinessradio.com and submit your comments and questions. Thanks for listening to todaysbusinessradio.com.